The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. Wonderful again to see such a nice fill. This is from Dogen Zenji, who is a 12th century Zen master who wrote instructions for the cook, the monastery cook, Tenzo Kyokun, instructions for the cook. So we're going to cook the supreme meal today. Never change your attitude according to the materials. If you do, it is like varying your truth when speaking with different people. Then you are not a practitioner of the way. When you prepare food, do not see with ordinary eyes and do not think with ordinary mind. Take up a blade of grass and construct a treasure king's land. Enter a particle of dust and turn the great Dharma wheel. Taking up a green vegetable, turn it into a 16-foot golden body of Buddha. Take a 16-foot golden body of Buddha and turn it into a green vegetable. Handle even a single leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of Buddha. Then, this in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in a most natural way. This is a miraculous transformation, a work of Buddha that benefits sentient beings. So, cooking our life, making our supreme meal together. Yesterday, we had a video here called Watching the Rock Grow, which I was very inspired by, seeing my teacher, my first teacher, Daido Roshi. The film was made in 1990, and it was how the monastery was founded and how he set up a training center, what ingredients he had to put in his pot and build this incredible meal of training and practice of the Buddha Dharma. On this hemisphere, fairly new to Zen. Zen was fairly new to this country and was all these teachers came and were forming centers. So it was the very formative years. It was the year I arrived at the monastery, 1990. And how he had so many flavors to deal with. Bitter, sweet, sour, delicate, strongly scented, weakly scented. And he created this 8 areas of training to study this self. And that one of Daido's teachings, which I'm sure he heard from Dogen and also felt very deeply, was this engaging and training fully in our everyday activities with mindfulness, dedication, attention to the smallest detail is the enlightened way, is enlightenment itself, that kind of practice. Take a green vegetable, turn it into a 16-foot golden body of Buddha. So he just loved the teachings of Master Dogen. And when I came to Zen Mountain Monastery in 1990, I was there for only a week, and I was made the monastery cook for a year. which I felt very comfortable doing. I love to cook, and you know, I came from a clay background, so I was used to working with large amounts of material. And people was part of those ingredients. And when I had one of my first dokusans with Daito Roshi, he said, I want you to read this fascicle by Dogen Zenji called Instructions for the Cook. It's in a book called Refining Your Life by Uchiyama Roshi that had come out. And he had these, if you saw the video, I should show it again, but he had a big gap in his teeth. He's very toothy. And he smiled at me with this big, his big toothy grin. And he said, we'll get you to see how to take a lettuce leaf and handle it in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. And I'm like brand new, wet behind the ears. I was like, yeah, sure, okay. Right, sure, okay, whatever that means. And I believe that he assigned it to every cook, and we still do. And one former cook said to me, it's not reading that book that's difficult. It's actually doing it, what it says. So what is it showing us? I'll just pull out parts today about how we prepare this life. What are the ingredients we're finding that we have? Our happiness, our depression, our grumpiness, people, things. How does that become part of the ingredients? That those ingredients have no fixed position. They're ingredients. How can they work for us as we're making this supreme meal together and individually? Our life, moment to moment, with all that's presented to us. Working in this relative world as well, of this and that's, of discrimination. Uchiyama wrote, in the world of discrimination, there are valuable things, worthless things, new things, shabby things, beautiful things, ugly things, attractive things, disgusting things. When this is the only way we see, eventually there will come a time when our life circumstances, on balance, seem bleak and dismal. On the other hand, if we handle the most mundane items with care and appreciation, our whole system of validation is turned on its head. I really like that. Our whole system evaluation is turned on its head when we just don't stay in these discriminations of this is valuable, this isn't, this is worthy, this isn't, this is new, this is shabby, this is beautiful, this is ugly. And we handle with care every part of our cooking. And I came across this term as I was studying called Nyoho practice, which I didn't know about in all these years. And it says, Nyoho practice is looking for opportunities to act in accord with the Dharma in the midst of our daily lives in very practical physical ways. We view no act as too mundane or insignificant to perform with care. You know, we always say, before you leave the zendo, straighten your, you know, bring your cushion up to its fullest and put it back, because that has an effect when you come back in. If you see an all mashed cushion, like someone just got off, it feels different than when it's in its upright position, centered on the mat, and the mat's nice and neat. These things have an effect. We view no act as too mundane or insignificant to perform with care. Closing a door, anything, stepping into a subway. And no object or being we encounter as beneath our respect or attention. No object or being we encounter as beneath our respect or attention. So just to hold that for a moment as a practice, it's saying Nyoho practice, something we practice. And as we do it in that way, our whole valuation would turn on its head. So Dogen has this teaching, which we're working with, this ongoing, all-inclusive study, encountering everywhere. So whatever we're meeting, we're doing this primarily through art practice, but our lives, cooking our lives, whatever we meet, you know, it's kind of like we hear that a lot, that's our teacher. But in a sense, yes, that's what it's saying, that everything we meet can teach us something if we have that kind of openness, as it said, that openness of mind. So he's inviting us to be alchemists. Yeah, alchemists, to shapeshifters. Transform our lives with all of our ingredients into awakening. So most important, when we function as the Zen cook of our life, we leave out the attachment to ourself. That's one of the ingredients that Dogen speaks of. When we function as the cook of our life, leave that attachment of self, like anger, like the three poisons. Like anger is considered a poison when it's self-centered, self-motivated. It can be a poison. And if we take out our attachment in anger to the self, anger, the same emotion, the same energy, can be the fierce energy, very fierce energy of determination or care. So, you know, I think anger gets a bad rap, like don't have anger. It's a very powerful force. It's just a word. But used in the right way, where we're not attached to ourself, it could be a very positive force. And it could also mean we care so much. Take out the self-centered aspect of greed. That becomes a desire to help. We just don't want it for ourselves. And we drop the self-orientation from ignorance. And that becomes a state of a knowing, of unknowing, that allows us new things to arise. So Dogen wrote this fascicle in 1236, just to give you a context. He finished it in 1237. He was 37 years old. Okay, who's 37 here? This is like his, I don't know how many he's written already since he was born in 1200. And he started writing these fascicles like when he was 25 or 26. Can you believe it? It's kind of like Martin Luther King and his writings. He started so young. Just something was coming through so powerfully. And it said that he had a reputation for being a strict teacher. So the number of his followers and disciples was rapidly increasing. I found that interesting too. He was known as a strict teacher, and things increased. Like people came to him for something, some kind of guidelines, or it offered something, his strictness of holding to the Buddha Dharma. And it helped people focus and see what was real and true. That's what I imagine. And of course, just as the Buddha said, you get more people together, you need more protection, more guidelines, more ways of practicing together that everyone understands this is what we do here. This is how we comport ourselves. Regulations, they're called. So we can all practice together with as few difficulties as possible. But we're people, so things will come up within communities and we work with them. So these are guidelines for the kitchen, and that's how they were born, because things were happening in the kitchen. And so Dogen used to say, Dharma is food, and food is Dharma. And usually that position in the kitchen was given to a roshi or a senior monastic, but such is the case. I just arrived and I was the cook, so we just took whoever like has a way-seeking mind, which is all of us here. So you could be the cook, okay? And sometimes you didn't know how to cook. Those were, we all had to go through that with someone. Broccoli, 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 broccoli. Then something else might come in. It's great. It's a great position to nourish the community. And Dogen speak on the back of the Uchiyama's book, he said, Dogen had three secrets for enlightenment to generate these attitudes of mind, which we can all use today. A joyful mind, Kishin, parental and nurturing mind, Roshin, and magnanimous mind, Daishin. So living with a joyful heart, cultivating this joyful mind, a caring with the deep concerns of a parent, a parental mind, and performing all activities with compassion. I was just thinking of Yukon. He's one of my Dharma brothers who died last year in February. And he was, those of you that knew him, he was quite funny and always like a trickster in a way, always joking around and getting, he had this way with people. And I used to tell him, I used to say, parental mind, Yukon. When I wanted him to shape up, I'd say, I want to see your parental mind. And he'd snap to, like, oh yes, parental mind. Take care of things. Don't just keep joking around. Take care. And that was part of it, but do it in such a way that he was taking care, nurturing. Dogen puts it like this. The aspects of these attitudes are to see that working for the benefit of others benefits oneself. To understand that through making every effort for the prosperity of the community, one revitalizes their own character. So I'll just say a little bit about this joyful spirit mind. Ed Epsi Brown, who also was from San Francisco Zen Center, started this restaurant Greens and Tassajara cookbook. That's Ed Brown, if you have that one. That was a great cookbook. So he would teach these different mind spirits. He said, joyful, consider this carefully. All of the myriad circumstances which brought you to the front door of this temple today to engage Zazen, you made this opportunity. You walked onto the path. And to encounter this Dharma, as we just chanted, the Dharma is rarely encountered, even in millions of ages. What a rare gift that you gave yourself today, that you are encountering the Dharma. It may not seem that way, but hey, all of Brooklyn isn't here today. So it is pretty rare. But you are. And we can be grateful and spirited by this movement of raising the Bodhi mind. Every moment we have lived, every choice we have made up until this moment, if one decision was changed, we can't say our path would be the same, could we? One decision might be different. We made all these decisions. Every choice up to this point, which we may not have seen as a choice, but that's the way it lined up, brought us to here, this moment. And one aspect of joyful mind that Daito Roshi always emphasized, which we heard in the film yesterday, was put your entire being into your activity. Just give it your whole body and mind. Don't hold anything back. Like a plant, when the sun's shining, they just like turn towards it. You don't see a few petals like, no, not today. They just go right to it, right? He says, with that kind of turning, do what you're doing completely. We see that's no small thing. I mean, get up and do kinhin to really just walk. Do you see? Like, we go off in our head and we're not just walking. We're thinking about this and that and hamburger and the whatever. But to just walk, we have to really be meticulous in our effort, understand why, what we're doing. And most of us have had this experience of a joyful mind, direct experience, wholeheartedly engaged in activity. I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. And we know other things happen. We have annoyed, angry, not wanting, what is this moment mind? The world becomes narrow, necessary, completely filled as that. Like when we're annoyed, that's it. That's the whole world, right? All our thoughts. Sometimes we forget we're actually aware of that. Sometimes we're not, but if we're aware of it, we're aware. We're aware we're annoyed. We're aware we're angry. That's good. That's good. It's all inclusive. It's not going to a particular state. Because all of those aspects of our enlightened nature, annoyance, anger, so there's wisdom there. There's wisdom in all those experiences. Or what we call, you know, anger, depression. There's wisdom there. And that, if we can see that, if we can care about that attitude, is what Dogen's saying. Just care about the attitude we're in. Meet it with awareness. And then we have the possibility to see what's happening in that state and relax a bit and meet this more directly with our senses, not with our stories, just senses. And right there, we can find a bit of joyful mind in that awareness. Do you know that? I'm sure maybe you know that. And especially when we could say it to someone who we're with and we're really annoying or angry. And we could say, like, right now, I'm really annoying and angry. It kind of takes the lid off the pot. We're not going to blow. Dogen says, if this is not clear, yet clear to you, it is because your thoughts run around like a wild horse and your feelings jump about like a monkey in the forest. You might have heard Zazen in the beginning called it working with our monkey mind. It's like a monkey that's swinging in the jungle, and we grab a thought and we swing, and we grab another thought and we swing, and we swing, and we swing. And unless we interrupt that, we just keep swinging from... Dad used to say, from cradle to death, we keep swinging on vines. So when the monkey and the horse step back and reflect upon themselves, freedom from all discrimination is realized naturally. This is the way to turn things while being turned by things. And there was a film made about Ed Brown. I don't know if any of you see it, called How to Cook Your Life, a documentary by Doris Dory, who did Blossoms. What's the name? I wanted to Cherry Blossoms and a bunch of other Enlightenment Guaranteed. Yeah, Dory. So she did this very raw footage of Ed Brown talking about being a cook, and it's very raw. And Ed's there talking to his students, and he's telling his students that he is a human being. And he says, he's like all human beings, I get irritable, I get fed up, and I get frustrated. And this is not sweetened in the film. She's just, you know, he's saying it to his students. And at one point in the film, he becomes really annoyed with his students because they don't know how much salt is required in a bread recipe, and he just goes ballistic. And he did a retreat at the monastery when I was the cook in 1990, and I witnessed him do that. And yet I felt something different. Like, it could be taken to feel like that's really excessive, what he's doing right now, in his fed-upness. But I really thought he was demonstrating clearly, knowingly, an important part about how our lives are discovered in details. Because he knew what he was experiencing, and he just brought it out. This awareness of fed-upness and anger. And he just folded it in. He folded it into the tomato sauce. You know, I used to say to Dido, I was like, I don't think I can cook today. Like, I'm having a moment of, like, I'm upset, and I'm you know, disappointed. And I said, I don't think I should cook because people are going to, like, eat, and they're going to feel, like, disappointed, and they're going to get my upset. He said, no. He said, alchemize it. Transform it. Like, when you're actually cooking, is that what you feel? And I said, no, I'm so excited. Like, it feels great. I'm in there cutting the carrot. He says, exactly. He said, just take all of those ingredients and put it in the pot, and it'll change. But when you try and keep something out, that's not going to work. It's a good teaching. Dogen points out, we only have the moment-to-moment details to sincerely care for. That's it. All in the details. We've heard that. It's, our life is details. And that's where what we sincerely care for, all of that. All of it, moment-to-moment. He says, prepare the meals of your life day and night in this way without wasting time. If there is sincerity in your cooking and associated activities, whatever you do will be an act of nourishing the sacred body. If there is sincerity in our actions, in our cooking, and with our activities, whatever we do will be an act of nourishing the sacred body of all beings, of everything. But then, you know, those poisons, it becomes very self-centered. And what are we seeing? Not everybody's getting this wonderful meal that we have the potential for. He says, this is also the way of ease and joy for the great assembly. Uchiyama says, it's called life that is lived fully and completely, nothing held back, the supreme meal. And there's another story of Dogen, you may have heard, where he meets the cook on the boat going to China. So Dogen was going to China to see if he could find authentic Zen training because he wasn't feeling it in Japan. And by the way, there was a potter on that ship, I learned. So when I was in clay, and the Chinese had developed glazes before the Japanese had developed. They were using mostly raw firing. And on the ship was a potter named Shigematsu, who in this book I was reading on pottery spoke about this guy named Dogen he met who was going for Zen teachings. And there was a cook there, and they were all having this conversation. So when I got to the monastery and Dido said, Master Dogen, I just went like, the guy on the boat, you know? But I didn't follow him then. I went for the other guy. I wanted the secret glazes from China. But Dido was so impressed with this cook on the boat that he visited him at his monastery. And when he got there, he was drying mushrooms out in the courtyard. And it said the stones were on the courtyard were so hot that they burned one's feet. Ever go out like when the patio is so hot, it's just like burning your feet? So that's how hot it was. And this old man who was 70, I don't like to say that now, like really old, 70? Nay. But he had a cane and an arched back, and Dogen asked him, why don't you have an attendant dry the mushrooms for you? And the Tenzo answered, others are not me. Dogen asked, the sun is hot, why do it now? And the Tenzo answered, what time should I wait for? I have taken this position in my old age. This is the fulfillment of many years of practice. How can I delegate the responsibility to others? Dogen writes, I again asked the Tenzo, Honorable Tenzo, Why don't you concentrate on Zazen practice and on the study of the ancient master's words rather than troubling yourself by holding the position of Tenzo and just working? Is there anything good about it? And the Tenzo did what you just did, laughed and aloud and replied, "Good man from a foreign country. You do not understand practice or know the meaning of the words of ancient masters." Hearing him respond in this way, I suddenly felt ashamed and surprised. So I asked him, "What are words? What is practice?" And the Tenzo said, "If you penetrate this question, how can you fail to become a person of understanding?" Very zen-y, huh? You ask a question, and you get a question. Right back, the boomerang. Any good teacher will throw you a boomerang as a student. You throw it out, and it just goes shoo, 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 boom, right back. So that's a good way to test a teacher, if the boomerang comes back. So Dogen withdrew with a deep appreciation of the Tenzo's practice and the manifestation of Buddha Dharma. What should I wait for? So part of training is knowing what it's time for. As you see, we have a Zen clock, right? We start, boom, 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 boom. 9:25, Densho starts. We say arrive at 9:15, give yourself some time to settle in. Jikido lights the candle at a certain time. It's always our practice, no one else's. So we're always learning what it's time for. When do we take the soup off the stove so it doesn't burn? There's a time for things. We have to pay attention to what it's time for as in our care. When is it time to speak to someone in an important way? I always look at that with my teacher. I see, when do I talk to Shugan about this? Not now. But I could feel when there's a receptivity happening and it's the time for it. Otherwise, I might get burnt in a certain way. I don't mean in a bad way. He doesn't do that. But it's not the right time. I do it to myself, actually. So, you know, Daido lived in the parsonage, which was where the Jizo house is. There's another building there now, but he lived right on campus, so he saw everything. He had a big picture window. It was a little house, tiny little structure, but his living room was all windows around, so he could see from his living room right into our zendo, the monastery zendo. And so one day, we had this phone that he would call, and we called it the bat phone, because he could call us directly. And when we heard that ring, we knew it was Daido calling. We should answer the bat phone. So in the morning. I was an attendant up front, and the bat phone rang. And so I run down. I get it. He said, "The Jikido's late." I said, "What?" He said, "I could see from my living room, they lit the candle late. It's your responsibility to know what it's time for and tell them." I was like, whoa. Wow. Why the demand? Who was that for? And then how did I transmit that to the person? And I looked at my watch and I was like, damn, he's right. And I knew it was a little over, but I was, you know, okay, you know. But it was a little over. And it was repetitive, too. It wasn't the first time. And this time he saw it. So what is it time for? In the kitchen, of course, you know, Daido and Dogen taught all of life is Zazen. So Zazen needs to come off our cushion into our life. And Zazen is paying attention, right? Staying present. And of course, in the kitchen, knives are sharp. Potatoes and Mushrooms are very slippery to cut when they get wet. Vegetables rot. Things can burn. All these details and caring and a timing. And there's joy to be in accord with the Dharma in time, in the midst of our daily lives. And often when people go to a retreat at the monastery, the kitchen is one of the places they'll end up, you know. Because we get a simple task for caretaking. Caretaking, that's the name of it. Cutting a vegetable. Simple, deceivingly simple sometimes, just doing these physical tasks. And we get this chance to practice wholeheartedly, just on this one thing. And once I gave someone, I needed all these onions, and I gave them a whole bunch of onions to cut, big bowlful, in fact. And I just watched them. I was so inspired. They did it all. They were bawling and wet and just, you know, and they did it like there was nothing else to worry about. Like that was their entire, they totally did it. I was so inspired. And it was like onions, you know. I could see their joy in doing it. Like it, they weren't bothered by what an onion does. It was remarkable. They were just naturally engaging. And then this parental mind is this mind of treating all things as being sacred, as with respect, affectionate caring for what we're handling. How deep is a love like that? It's parental mind taking up a green vegetable and turning it into a 16-foot golden body. Taking a 16-foot golden body and turning it into a green vegetable. With a nurturing mind, a parental mind, we can make all things, all activities alive and vibrant. So to really strive to treat things like that in all our affairs, particularly with people, with each other, that parental mind with good care and deep respect, no matter what the ingredients are before you. Not so easy. I always love this part. It says, take special care lest a mouse accidentally falls into the pot. Under no circumstances allow anyone who happens to be drifting through the kitchen to poke their fingers around or look into the pot. We know that happens a lot, especially at the monastery. We're always hungry. So we'd always used to, and we had, the kitchen was a big passageway. And so people would say, ooh, cookies. And, you know, you're the cook and you're like, all right, take one, you know. But you got 50 people walking through. There goes your cookies. So it's a good rule, a good regulation. I don't think Dogen was talking about some cosmic, magical power. He's saying, with respect to anything, act in a way where we're seeing with loving eyes, handling things as sacred, and something happens. We feel it. It's not rational. We feel it. There was a woman that came to a Zen training weekend, and then she sent a little video of her husband vacuuming. She sent him for a gift. And when he went home, he was vacuuming and he never did it before. So she took this video and she says, I don't know what you people did, but I love it. And suddenly, like just in like, he started to see like with loving eyes, I suppose, and care, like he cared if the place was clean, but she never saw him vacuum. So she goes, I don't know what you did, but. And that was him, right? He just turned it on himself, turned it. So where do we draw the line of any activity being less than sacred? Like when you're parking your car, do you line it up straight? And do you notice, like, if I leave room, then this guy can get out or someone else can park there? that awareness, that parental mind, putting your shoes on the shoe rack straight, not like on the floor, like all different directions. He says, sounds pretty simple to let it register. And Uchiyama says, and see how it feels handling everything with equal care. This also includes being prudent and aware what is needed. Dogen says, see the pot as your own head and the water as your lifeblood. And then this magnanimous mind, he says, big mind, it's sometimes called. He offers this advice to the Tenzo. Like a mountain, stable and impartial, exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. Although drawn by the voices of spring, do not allow your heart to fall. With this attitude, we engage in activities fair-minded, impartial, not swayed by our judgments, good or bad. Your attitude towards things should not be contingent upon their quality. A person who is influenced by the quality of the thing or who changes their speech or manner according to the appearance or position of the people they meet is not a person working in the way. So what is this impartiality, this non-discriminating mind? Dogen goes on to say, neutering mind makes things sacred and worthy of respect. Magnanimous mind makes all things equally sacred and valuable, where the mind is stable and imperturbable. While the mind may whip the waves of the ocean's surface, magnanimous mind lets us remain a full, vast body down to the depths. And just because magnanimous mind makes things equally sacred and valuable, doesn't mean we ignore the differences. The differences between people, between things. The mind is broad and impartial enough to include and encompass differences, rather than pretending they're not there. That's important. Yes, we have to discriminate stones from lentils. I don't want to eat stones. We've got to know what a stone is, and it's not a lentil. But are we taking stones from lentils, or are we taking lentils from stones? Dogen expresses this when he describes cleaning up the kitchen. Put those things that naturally go in a high place onto a high place, and those that would be most stable on a low place, onto a low place. Clean the chopsticks, ladles, and all the other utensils. Handle them with equal care and awareness, putting everything back where it naturally belongs. Keep your mind on your work and do not throw things around carelessly. But that's so fun sometimes. Like, don't get too rigid. I mean, you gotta like fling things around sometimes. I do. With a little music too, you know. Anyway, I think you get the point. It's not about rigidity, but it's just the respect and the care. And some things want to be flung sometimes. Can we kindly, lovingly make differences part of our life practice? He says, do not arouse disdainful mind when you prepare a broth of wild grasses. Do not arouse joyful mind when you prepare a fine cream soup. I was just thinking of you. I'll tell you why. When there is no discrimination, how can there be distaste? Thus, do not be careless when you work with poor materials, and sustain your efforts when you have excellent materials. Never change your attitude according to the materials. If you do, it's like you're varying your truth when speaking to different people. Our habitensity is not to use ingredients we might think might ruin the meal. Sometimes those are the best. The thing we think might ruin it might be the best. We want to throw them away, maybe hide them in the back of the refrigerator. on the back shelf, out of sight, behind everything else. But Dogen instructs us, take the ingredients we think are going to ruin our meal and figure out how to use them that they improve it. So just look at the world situation too. What we think is going to be ruined and is being ruined, and figure out how to use it so it can improve. Apply it to any situation. I know some of you know I was making a bean soup and Yukon was with me in the kitchen. We were like Mutt and Jeff, you know. But I found, and we were cleaning out the refrigerator, and you know, you build a soup as you're cleaning and you got a little piece of this and you cut it up. And we came across a half a banana. And I'm talking about a pot of soup. So I said, peel it and put it in the soup. He says, I'm not putting that in the soup. I said, it's a bean soup. Bananas go with beans. Like, put it in the soup. We got in such a fight over like a little piece of banana that even when he was sick and dying, he made a joke and he says, I can't believe you put that banana in the soup. Till his last breath. So how about it in regards to a person? Times we might seem that we can't find a way to use somebody's particular qualities, which may seem toxic and harmful to what we're trying to do. We may make a clear decision not to use their particular ingredients in the meal. We can make that decision. And we don't ignore or deny the ingredient. But we can still make a choice without denying it. Acknowledge it. Remain aware of it. We may even appreciate it in another context. But we decide at that moment we won't be using it. And then to refrain from saying that about someone's life. I don't want to be like that. I'll leave it out on the table. It's still going to be there, whether we like it or not. So why deny the flavor? So cultivating bigness that doesn't judge. Like we sit a period of zazen and we might say, oh, that was really a good period of zazen. And then we have another one. Oh, I couldn't even get to two in that period. It was terrible, useless. I sat this morning, I just saw my mind was busy. You saw that. Do you see? That's awareness. That's precious. Don't judge the ingredient. Just see it for what as it is. Dogen ends his instructions with these words. If anything should be revered, it is enlightenment. If any time should be honored, it is the time of enlightenment. When you long for enlightenment and follow the way, even taking sand and offering to the Buddha is beneficial. Drawing a figure of Buddha and paying homage also has an effect. How much more so if you act in harmony with the minds and actions of your ancient predecessors? How can you fail to bring forth their virtue and practice? After all, enlightenment's job is compassionate activity. Zazen is compassionate activity. How is it then when we act, when no act is viewed as too mundane or insignificant to meet someone or perform with care, that no object or being we encounter is beneath us in terms of being worth our respect and attention. Because everything matters. Everything's connected. So, let's keep cooking our supreme meal together. Thank you for being here, for listening.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.